This meeting is being recorded.
Thank you. This is the time and place set for the workshop on proposed regulation pertaining to Assembly Bill 332, Student Loan Servicers, as described by the Notice of Workshop, dated and posted on November 9, 2023. This workshop is scheduled for 10 a.m. and is being recorded. Today is Wednesday, November 29, 2023, and it is 10:02 a.m. Financial Institution Division staff present at today's hearing is Commissioner Sandy O'Loughlin, Senior Deputy Attorney General Louis Soka, Administrative Assistant Devin Owens, Examiner and your coordinator for today, Jennifer Ramsey, and myself, Deputy Commissioner Mary Young. If you have not already done so, please take the time to mute your telephone, your microphone, and any electronics that you may have. Again, this workshop is being recorded. If you are joining us by web, please activate the chat by clicking the dialog balloon and enter your information on the sign-in sheet for the meeting record. If joining by phone, please email fidmaster@fid.state.nb.us to request to sign the form. This email address can also be found on the workshop notice. Those who wish to provide public comment here in the room, please come to the table when I begin the public comment portion of the workshop. It is important to emphasize that the purpose of this workshop is to obtain input from all interested parties in the process of adopting regulations pursuant to AB 332. In today's workshop, we will be soliciting general comments regarding the subject matter contained in each section of the proposed regulation. I will be summarizing the sections of the proposed regulation today and will take comment on those specific sections after those sections have been read. We will now move on to item two on the agenda, public comment. This is the time to provide general comment for the record. If you wish to comment on a specific section of the proposed regulation, please hold your comment until we reach that specific section during the presentation. There will also be an opportunity to provide general public comment prior to the closing of the workshop. There is no need to restate a comment already made. If you have written material that you would like to submit, for those here in Las Vegas, please hand it to Devin Owens in the back, or please email it to fidmaster@fid.state.nb.us. Public comment will be limited to 3 minutes per person or less due to time constraints. Comments will first be taken from those web participants, and then by the phone participants, and then those who comments from here in Las Vegas. For those who joined us virtually and would like to provide a public comment, please type an X in the chat box, or you can call the toll-free number on the agenda at 1-844-621-3956. Please wait for Please wait to be recognized by the coordinator before muting your phone or microphone. Clearly state and spell your first and last name, and clearly state your business affiliation before you begin your comment. Okay, do we have anyone who would like to provide public comment that joined us via web?
We have no web commenters.
Anyone that joined us by phone?
We have no phone commenters.
Anyone that joined us here in Las Vegas? Okay, not hearing or seeing any, we will move on to agenda item three, which is the presentation of the proposed regulations. I will summarize the sections of the proposed regulation and take comment on those specific sections after those sections are read. When it's time for comment, the same format as general public comment will be followed, which is comments will be taken first from those individuals that joined in by web, second from those individuals that joined in by phone, and lastly from those here in Las Vegas. Section 3 defines place of business. Section 4 requires the licensed place of business to be commercially zoned, located in the United States, and for each licensee to hold the required local license to operate as a student loan servicer at the licensed location. Section 5 allows a student loan servicer to maintain its licensed place of business outside of Nevada if they make the books and records available to the division at a location in Nevada, or they pay the reasonable expenses for examiners to conduct an investigation or examination at the out-of-state location. Section 6 establishes the retention period for not less than 6 years for all records and files required by AB 332, in addition to the records and files required by this section. Prior to the workshop, we received written public comment regarding Section 6. The first comment for this section, we're requesting a change to the beginning of the section. The comment would like us to add, except to the extent inconsistent with federal law or regulation. The division does not think it's necessary to add such language, since AB 332, Section 28, already has the language, except to the extent inconsistent with federal law or regulation, a student loan servicer shall maintain a record of each transaction. The next comment for Section 6 is for Subsection A, to remove private education loan borrower, because private education borrower is included in the definition of student loan borrower pursuant to AB 332, Sections 9 and 11. The division would like this language to remain, since the definition in AB 332, Section 11, is more expansive than Section 9. The final comment for Section 6 is for Subsection 8, Or H, the reference to private education lender narrows the applicability of this provision to private education loans, excluding federal student loans. Commenter is requesting the division to include federal student loans. The division cannot add federal student loans since AB 332 established the law for private education loans and not federal student loans. If anyone wishes to comment on sections 3, 4, 5, or 6, now's the time to do so. Jennifer, do we have anyone that would like to provide comment that joined us by web?
We have Scott on the web.
Okay, Scott, we are ready for your comment. Please make sure that you state and spell your first and last name and your business affiliation.
Sure, it's Scott Buchanan with the Student Loan Servicing Alliance. And in general, on Section 6, I think one thing that we identify would be useful is a clarification about the trigger date for the retention period of not less than 6 years. In general, that is generally assumed to be the date of paid in full or when the loan is sold or transferred as the trigger date to start that period of time. But we think that would be useful to clarify exactly what that date is so that we can comply with that request.
Okay, thank you for your comment. I do believe that it's more detailed in the bill itself for what you have to retain the records for. I apologize, I don't know what section that is offhand. But we will definitely take that in consideration. If it's not clear in the actual bill, then we will consider adding language to that section in regulation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have a Winston from the web.
Okay, Winston, we're ready for your comment.
Hey, Winston Berkman Green with the Student Borrower Protection Center. I just want to further comment and clarify perhaps the earlier comment about Section 6H. And why there would be a benefit to either including contracts for all types of student loans, not just private education loans, or clarifying that H is only applicable to those that have private education loans. And that's because the entirety of Section 6 applies to all student loan servicer licensees, not at all, actually, private education lenders. So although the content of H refer to private education lenders, this provision is actually about servicers. And so if a servicer has access to a promissory note, that could be applicable to either a private education loan or a federal student loan. So either clarifying that both types of loans are applicable or not holding a federal student loan servicer accountable for having private education loan contracts that they don't actually service, that helps to clarify.
It does. That clarifies that a little bit more. Okay. Okay. Yes. Thank you for providing clarification on that. I think we will rediscuss that internally and see if what changes we need to make for that section. We appreciate the comment. Thank you. Any other commenters?
We have no more commenters on the web.
Any that joined us by phone?
We have no phone commenters.
Okay. And anyone that joined us here in Las Vegas?
I just want to echo what Winston was saying. That was my concern as well. And it's clarification.
Can you please state your name and spell your name? And
it's
your
Amanda Bosco, BASKOV.
And your business affiliation?
Just private citizen.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we will continue. Section 7 makes it clear that a private education lender making student loans in Nevada must obtain an NRS 675 license from the division. We received one written public comment regarding this section, requesting the division to add holders of private education loans to make it clear holders of private education loans are required to obtain an NRS 675 license. AB 332, Section 7, Subsection 1, already incorporates holders of a private education loan and is not required to be added to the regulation. However, to ensure it is clear, we are proposing language as to state, as defined in Section 7.1 of Assembly Bill 332, for the section to now read, for the purpose of Section 7.1 and 37 of Assembly Bill 332, a private education lender, as defined in Section 7.1 of Assembly Bill 332, extending private education loans or student education loans in the state or to a private education loan borrowers or student loan borrowers in the state, must obtain an NRS 675 license from the Office of the Commissioner prior to engaging in lending activity. Section 8 sets the surety bond amount and conditions of the bond. Section 9 states what documentation is required to request an exemption from licensure pursuant to Section 20 of Assembly Bill 332. Section 10 requires any change to the licensee's business name, fictitious firm name or DBA, license location, change in control of the licensee, or any change in the information provided in the initial application must be approved by the division. If anyone wishes to offer comments on Section 7, 8, 9, or 10, now is the time to do so. Do we have any comments from those who joined us by web?
We have Scott from the web.
Okay, Scott, we are ready for your comment.
Sure, again, it's Scott Buchanan with the Student Loan Servicing Alliance. On Section 8, in regards to the surety bond, we'd ask that the state look at comparable surety bond requirements in other states. For example, in California, the requirement is $25,000, Virginia, it's $50,000. A $250,000 bond is relatively high in comparison to any other state that has this requirement. And certainly that could potentially, for smaller servicers, pose issues. So we'll ask you to look at that section and perhaps assess what other states have done in that amount to provide a reasonable basis for the determination of the amount of bond.
Okay, and you had said that California is at
$25,000? That's last time I checked. I'd have to go back and look, but yes, okay. That's my recollection.
Thank you for your comment. We will consider if that is an appropriate bond amount or not in the regulation. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
If anyone else?
We have Winston from the web.
Winston, we are ready for your comment.
Thank you again, Winston Berkman Green with the Student Bar Protection Center. And thank you for clarifying the earlier comment in Section 7 about whether private education lenders have to get a license or only if they're lending, doing the lending component of that definition of that private education loan. I would just call to your attention and ask that you think about whether this needs to be addressed. The holders of these loans that are defined as private education lenders but might not be required to get a 675 license because they're not lending, they're holding, they're downstream acquiring the loans. How, if at all, the commissioner needs to address obtaining information from them if they are not otherwise a licensee. They might not be required to get a student loan servicing license if they're not servicing, and they might not be required to get a 675 license if they're not lending. But for at least the Section 40 market monitoring purposes, the commissioner might seek information from these private education lenders, and if there's some other regulatory mechanism that has to be implemented to make sure that that can happen.
Thank you for your comment. I understand what you're saying. That's interesting. I don't know how we're going to. Yeah, because holders.
Not part of
it. Because holders don't lend, so they don't need 675 technical credits for that. But yeah, we'll take a look at that. Thank you for your comment. Do we have any other commenters from the?
We have no more web commenters.
Anyone that joined us by phone?
No phone commenters.
Anyone that joined us here from Las Vegas? We will continue. Sections 11, 12, and 13 establishes the fees that a student loan servicer will pay the division, in addition to the application and licensing fees set in Assembly Bill 332. Section 11 sets the hourly rate for an examination or investigation of the licensee. Section 12 sets the certified public accountant assessment, and Section 13 sets the attorney general assessment. Section 14 grants the authority to the commissioner to revoke or suspend a license if a licensee violates any provisions of this chapter, including not paying any fee or assessment and not allowing the division to access books and records. Section 15 establishes the information required to be filed with the annual report due on or before April 15th of each year. We received written public comment on Section 15. The first comment was on subsection 5 to clarify if the division meant accounts paid or accounts that were paid off. The division has clarified the subsection to add accounts paid in full and the amount of the original loans. This proposed subsection will now read the number of accounts paid in full with the amount of the original loans. The second comment on Section 15, subsections 12 and 13, requesting these sections to be combined. The division has determined to keep these two separate subsections and not combine them. The third comment on Section 15 is requesting to add the number of accounts for which a debt had court action initiated. The division agrees and added a new subsection to Section 15 to read as the number of accounts with court action initiated and status of those accounts. The fourth comment on section 15 is requesting to add a reporting requirement for the number of accounts that are federal student loans versus private education loans. The division cannot add federal student loans since AB 332 established the loan for private education loans and not federal student loans. The final comment on section 15 is requesting to add a reporting requirement for the number of accounts with the cosigner. The division will not add this additional reporting requirement. Section 15 does state the commissioner may request additional information at any time necessary. If the division sees a need to request this information in the future, it has the authority to do so. If anyone wishes to offer comments on sections 11, 12, 13, 14, or 15, now is the time to do so. Do we have anyone that would like to provide comment that joined us by web?
I'm Scott from the web.
Scott from the web, we're ready for your comments.
Yes, again, Scott Buchanan, Student Loan Servicing Alliance. Generally, I would make comment about this. I think we have some strong concerns and hope that you all will consider those in regarding to the requirement in subsection 1 of providing individual private financial information of borrowers at an account level to the state without those borrowers' consent or knowledge. Information required about those things are very personal in nature, and in general, a borrower probably has no assumption that the state itself would be examining those personal records, including late fees, amount of the status of the loan, whether that borrower is delinquent or not, that disclosure of that status and that borrower's personal financial situation to the state. At an individual level seems very problematic. Certainly we understand the need to gather aggregate information and also during the course of examinations, we'd like to look at individual accounts. But for the state to create a warehouse of all borrowers and their personal financial information, including potentially monthly income of that borrower, we would view as pretty challenging and something that at least residents in the state of Nevada probably would have concerns about. Specifically, I would say in section 15, subsection 1, as it relates to payment schedules, to the extent you are going to require this, we assume that the definition of a payment schedule is a monthly payment amount. A payment schedule is not necessarily a term that's defined or regularly used in student loan servicing, so we appreciate potentially if you are going to collect this information that you clarify exactly what that means. Again, we assume that means monthly payment amount. For section J, in subsection 1, section J, your status of the loan, as well as K, the monthly income of the borrower, that is information that we do not regularly capture. And certainly sometimes we will have that information, sometimes we will not. Some of those in the origination function would be captured by the originator and not necessarily transferred to the servicer, so we would not have that information. And again, we strongly have concerns about reporting frequency and payment history being shared with the state when borrowers have not provided their consent on that. And finally, in perception 15 here, subsection 2, the requirement that we provide notices and disclosure provided to a borrower regarding the risk of student education loans. Certainly, we can provide account history about that information in aggregate to the state. However, servicers do not provide those notices and disclosures to cosigners because that is part of the origination process of student loans, and so therefore is outside of the purview of student loan servicers and would be the lender function. And certainly to the extent that the state regulates those lenders, could certainly request that information from them, but servicers may not have all of that disclosure that's provided in that upfront process. Thanks.
Okay, thank you for your comments. I think the disclosures are required per the bill, for that subsection 2.
I'm aware that you had some issues associated with what's statutorily required versus
right.
What's regulatory required. I think that's why we raised the concern. Realize that on some of these things there may be things that the statute requires, but certainly that's an opportunity when we'd love to work with you all about ways we can accommodate the statute, but also recognize some of those realities that I just expressed.
Okay, yes, we do appreciate that, because as you know, this is a whole new chapter, so as we work through this,
yep.
Appreciate any feedback. Anything that you want to provide to us in writing as well would be helpful.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. thank you for your comments on those. Do we have any other commenters from the web?
We have Winston from the web.
Winston, we're ready for your comments.
Great. Again, thank you, Winston Berkman-Green with the Student Bar Protection Center. Just to build off Scott's prior comment, although I don't agree that there are the same sort of privacy concerns he was alluding to, because none of the reporting items involve any personal identifying information, and so there shouldn't be any sort of concern on that front. I do agree with the sort of overall comment he was making that perhaps count level data may not be necessary. And for the purpose of, you know, as you already noted, the commissioner can come back for more information and during exams can check additional records and books. That aggregate may be appropriate in this instance, and in that instance, and if that is the case, then perhaps amending some of these to reflect average, you know, percentage rates or a spread of percentage rates or something along those lines. And then also, I agree with Scott that to the extent that perhaps amending 15.1 to clarify that this is to the extent any of these data points or records are available, some maybe with the lender, some maybe with the servicer, or just not putting an affirmative obligation on the servicer to collect things like income. I think it's fine if they have income information to have it reported, but I overall agree with that sort of point he's making there about having this match up with what is available, what is not going to be potentially unnecessarily onerous to collect. Although again, I don't really see a privacy issue as it's drafted. And then I just want to clarify the second to last comment that was read before opening it up about a reporting item that distinguishes between federal student loans and private student loans, and maybe take this as an opportunity to comment on what I view all of 332 to cover and make sure that the commissioner is on the same page or that, you know, there's not any issue there, which is that the licensing component of this law covers both servicers of federal and private student loans, and as such, Section 15's reporting obligations include servicers of both federal and private student loans, although it is true that the private education lender components only deal with private student loans. And so if having licensed student loan servicers do the reporting requirements of Section 15, it would therefore be helpful to have them distinguish between their federal student loan and private student loan portfolios, as federal student loan portfolios should be captured by this licensure and reporting requirement.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate your comments. And just to clarify, the reasons why we're asking for so much of this reporting is mainly based upon, well, part of two, we have to review these documentation, but it's mainly part of Section 40 in AB 332. Which is putting the requirement on our division to analyze the market of student loan servicing, gather data, analyze all the documentation, put reports together. So it puts a lot on us to do the risk, what's out there with each lender. So that's why we put so much in this reporting requirements, because we have to determine how are we going to report that to the legislators. So that kind of gives you the background. We weren't just asking for documentation just to ask for documentation. So again, as we're building this regulation, and it's a new chapter to us, we appreciate any feedback. So if you can provide us feedback, what you think for us to comply on Section 40 without making it too burdensome to everybody, we would appreciate it. And the sooner we get that in writing, the better. So thank you. Do you have any other comments from the web?
I have no more web commenters.
Any that joined us by phone? Any that joined us in Las Vegas? Oh, you have one?
No, phone commenters, I'm sorry.
Okay. I knew what you meant. Okay, hearing or seeing no other comments, we will continue. Section 16 requires licensees to maintain a trust account for the funds to collect from borrowers. Section 17 requires a licensee to obtain authorization from a borrower to receive all communications electronically. Section 18 allows a licensee to charge and collect fees from a borrower if authorized by the loan agreement. Section 19 requires policies and procedures to be developed in addition to the policies and procedures required to be developed in Assembly Bill 332. If anyone wishes to offer comments on Section 16, 17, 18, or 19, now is the time to do so. Do we have anyone that would like to provide comment that joined us by web?
We have no web commenters.
Anyone that joined us by phone?
We have no phone commenters.
Anyone that joined us in Las Vegas? Nope. Okay, we will continue. Section 20 requires a licensee to apply borrower payments to the outstanding loan balance upon receipt in accordance with the loan agreement. Section 21 requires licensees to provide timely and accurate information to credit bureaus and investigate any complaint received from a borrower concerning inaccurate credit reporting in a timely manner and to promptly correct incorrect negative information. Section 22 requires licensees to notify borrowers at least annually of the manner in which partial payments are allocated across multiple loans and follow any alternative payment allocation instructions by the borrower. Section 23 requires a licensee to provide a monthly statements with specific data. If anyone wishes to offer comments on sections 20, 21, 22, or 23, now is the time to do so. Do we have anyone that would like to provide comment that joined us by web?
We have no web commenters.
Anyone that joined us by phone?
We have no phone commenters.
Anyone here in Las Vegas? Okay, not hearing or seeing any, we will continue. Section 24 requires a licensee to post their license number on their homepage or on a page that is conspicuously connected to the homepage by a link that clearly reveals its content. Section 25 requires licensees to post on their homepage or on a page that is conspicuously connected to the homepage by a link that clearly reveals its contents and notice of right for a borrower to contact the division to file a written complaint along with required information in this section. Section 26 allows for a license renewal late fee to be waived if the renewal is submitted through the nationwide multi-state licensing system after November 1st and on or before December 31st of each year. Section 27 grants the authority to the Commissioner and Division to request any information or documentation necessary to perform an examination or investigation of an applicant or licensee. If anyone wishes to offer comments on sections 24, 25, 26, or 27, now is the time to do so. Do you have anyone that would wish to provide comment that joined us by web?
We have no web commenters.
That joined us by phone?
We have no phone commenters.
Here in Las Vegas. Okay, not hearing or seeing any, we will continue. Sections 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, and 34 makes changes to NAC 675, the Installment Loan and Finance Act chapter. Section 29 makes it clear that a private education lender operating in Nevada must comply with Assembly Bill 332, this regulation, NRS 675, and NAC 675. Sections 30 and 31 adds the definition of private education lender and private education loan to NAC 675. Section 32 makes clear that a lender will need to obtain a license under Chapter 675 to conduct business in Nevada. Section 33 requires licensees to post on their homepage or on a page that is conspicuously connected to the homepage by a link that clearly reveals its contents, a notice of right for a borrower to contact the division to file a written complaint along with the required information in this section. Section 34 grants the authority to the Commissioner and Division to request any information or documentation necessary to perform an examination or investigation of an applicant or licensee. If anyone wishes to offer comment on sections 28 through 34, now is the time to do so. Do we have anyone that would like to provide comment that joined us by the web?
We have no web commenters.
Those that joined us by phone?
We have no phone commenters.
Those here in Las Vegas. Okay, not hearing or seeing any, we will move on to item number 4, which is public comment. We'll open up public comment once more. If anyone would like to make additional comments, now is the time to do so. There's no need to restate a comment already made. Comments would first be taken from those who joined us by web, by telephone, and those in Las Vegas. Do we have anyone that joined us by web that would like to provide public comment?
We have Scott from the web.
Okay, Scott, we are ready for your comment.
Sure, it's Scott Buchanan, Student Loan Servicing Alliance, and I didn't get my hand up quick enough, but just to make a final comment on Section 17 of the proposed rule here, it requires sort of that a form be obtained. Generally, this consent is obtained electronically, either through a web sort of notification rather than a standalone form. I think it would be useful to clarify here that that we don't necessarily mean a specific form, but as long as we have an auditable and provable documentation trail that indicates that consent has been given in the manner in which it was obtained, we think that would be a useful clarification, also ensuring that we don't have to go back to borrowers who've already provided that consent and obtain it in a different way than it was previously obtained.
Okay. Thank you for your comment.
We have Winston from the web.
Okay, Winston, we're ready for your comment.
Thank you. Winston Berkman Green with the Student Borrower Protection Center. And I just want to make sort of a statement and then a comment. Generally, I just want to applaud and thank the whole team for putting this together so quickly after the bill became law and in light of all the changes that are going on at the federal student loan level, certainly. I think that's very timely for Nevada and for borrowers. And on that point, the comment I want to make is as you all have already indicated, you are just urge you to continue to be receptive and reach out to folks like Scott, Salsa, and my organization and borrowers themselves, because there are a lot of changes coming down the pike. certainly for student loan servicing, and it may be necessary to amend these regulations in one direction or another, just to make sure it reflects the reality of how the industry is working and how borrowers are experiencing servicing. And so I hope we can continue to work together over the coming years as those changes continue to be made. But again, thank you to the whole team for your work on this.
Okay, thank you for your comments. If anyone else would like to provide a comment?
I have no more web commenters.
Anyone that joined us by phone?
We have no phone commenters.
I'm here in Las Vegas.
So Amanda Bosco,
can you speak up a little bit?
Please
loud.
Step
yeah,
up.
It is the act.
Amanda Bosco, BASKOP, private citizen now, but I worked on this bill last session as a student. I represented the Associated Students of the University of Nevada, and I loved my four-year college experience, but unfortunately I had to graduate, which is a great thing. But it didn't. My college experience was the most formative experience of my life, but of course it didn't come without financial sacrifice for me and my family, and that's a very common story for other students. So I really appreciate your dedication and attention to these regulations. From my perspective, they really align well with the intent of the bill. I'm just happy to see that the state has recognized the growing nature of student loan debt as well as the industry, and that the legislature and governor has recognized that now's the time to start taking a look at it.
Okay.
So thank you for your attention. I appreciate
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Thank you for your comment. Thank you for your work on putting this bill together. Okay, not hearing or seeing any other comments, we will now move on to item 5 of the agenda, which is close of the workshop. The workshop pertaining to Assembly Bill 332 is hereby closed and adjourned on November 29, 2023 at 10:33 a.m. I want to thank everyone for joining us.
This meeting is no longer being recorded.
Can you turn off the mics as well?
Yes.
Okay,
we're good.
Okay.